Hello everyone, this is Paul Douglas Boyer and I'd like to welcome you to the Mad Money Machine, sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Index Funds Advisors, matching people with portfolios. This is the Mad Money Machine for the middle of February 2008, and this is show number... 99. Oops, I guess I better stop playing music. Some of the reviewers out at iTunes don't like me playing music. No, I'm not really bitter. Plenty of you have rated the show highly, and I appreciate you for doing that. I thank you so much. I'm reaching the remnant, that's for sure. I have gotten comments in the past that people don't like music played on the show, and I've gotten comments in the past that people love the music played on the show. And so I guess whatever tickles your fancy. Me, myself, I like music, and so I like to play the music that I like. And what you're listening to now, of course, is Toto and their song 99, and I think it has something to do with Agent 99 from the show Get Smart. And aren't they going to have a movie, a remake of that movie, Get Smart, or did that already come out? Hold on, let me check IMDb. Oh yeah, it's supposed to come out in June of this year, and it's going to have Steve Carell and Anne Hathaway as Agent 99. Should be good. In the news now, you know, I didn't watch the show 60 Minutes last Sunday, but I did see on the blogs that someone talked about a segment they did about the penny. And then I went online, I found their website. They had a segment called Should We Make Sense? And you can read the transcript there. The bottom line is this: the government makes about $80 million worth of pennies every year. But here's the problem. It costs them $134 million to make them. Now, this is not too bad if you're the zinc provider, you know, the people that sell the metal to the government. But it's bad if you're a taxpayer, and it's bad for not only taxes, but inflation. And guess what? The cost probably isn't going to go down. It's probably going to keep going up with the rising prices of commodities, or should I say the falling value of the dollar. And the same thing turns out with a nickel. They make $65 million worth of nickels every year, but it costs $124 million to make them. I say goodbye to the penny and the nickel. So how should we do this? Here's what we need to do. We need to simply get rid of a decimal place in prices. Think about this. Now, I know you love your precious two decimal places. You know, you go to the Walmarts and you see the sign. It says $14.95, 14.95. Or a lot of stores, they do 19.99. You know, they don't want to say $20. They'll say $19.99, a penny away from $20. Or sometimes even $1.00, $1. Well, I have a proposal that will save us taxpayers a lot of money in zinc costs, and that is get rid of a decimal place. So instead of 14.95, it would be 14.9. And instead of 19.99, it would be 19.9. All right, on the same items. No need to round up. We can get rid of nickels and pennies. The only use for a nickel would be if you had two of them, right? The only use for a penny would be if you had 10 of them. So eventually, the lowest common coin becomes the dime. And instead of saying something costs $14.90, it would be $14.09. It's a little mind shift. But when you were a child, you had to learn this stuff similarly for pennies and things. Now we have to relearn it as adults for dimes. $14.09. There would be no more talk of cents. Our pockets would be lighter. Our government would save $113 million each and every year by not having to make these nickel and penny coins. Of course, that's $1.3 billion after 10 years, and probably more due to the rising cost of zinc and copper. Just think what we could do with $1.3 billion. We could reduce our taxes. So if Hillary wins, it'll be a Clinton nation. And if Barack wins, it'll be
an abomination.
Just kidding. I don't mean to pick on your favorite political candidate. But speaking of Obama, I did listen to one of his speeches online recently, and here's a little segment I pulled out.
And by the way, we need Christians on Capitol Hill, and we need Jews on Capitol Hill, and Muslims on Capitol Hill. When you've got an estate tax that is talking about $1 trillion being taken out of social programs to go to a handful of folks who don't need it and weren't even asking for it, we need an injection of morality into our political debate.
It's funny how there's always two ways to phrase something, isn't it? I mean, taking money from the social programs instead of letting people keep their own money. This estate tax is a particularly good bounty for governments to confiscate, isn't it? I mean, the guy's dead after all. Let's go get his money.
An abomination.
Since I'm already gone down the road of politics, you remember on the last show I talk about reaching the remnant. Well, it turns out that presidential candidate, he whose name shall not be spoken, released a video on YouTube today, and here's what he had to say.
So I am at a point where I think we have to make a grand stand. We have to stand firm and see where the numbers are and be counted and see if the remnant is there and see how big it is. We can never count the remnant, but we can certainly energize those who have been identified already. So for me, I'm sort of getting excited about this because I have talked with others and they say this is a great idea.
What he's talking about there is putting together some big march on Washington, D.C. So, yeah, look for a big He Whose Name Shall Not Be Spoken freedom rally in 3 or 4 months in Washington, D.C. In other news, Yahoo's tech ticker is unleashed this week. If you go to finance.yahoo.com, at the top you'll see a tab for the tech ticker. And Henry Blodgett, along with Aaron Task, are two of the anchors for this internet video show about finance. Got an email from Paul in Rhode Island who alerted me to the fact that Jim Rogers, the guru from Show 97 and regular for Cafuto on Business, was highlighted in the video feed there. Interesting that in that interview he didn't talk about China or commodities. He talked about mistakes he'd made as a trader. And Paul concludes his email by saying, "Heard all of your shows, been listening since the dawn of time. I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been to go through the past 2 years with you. I always enjoy listening to an intelligent mind, which is why your podcast and manager tools have been my must-hear podcasts. Thank you so very much, Paul." And got an email from Garen. Says, "Paul, I finally caught up and listened to Show 96 and others. Your content is moving too fast for some of us slowpokes, and my book backlog is growing. And so in order to combat your constant stream of books and slow you down, I have one to suggest. I think you should read The Economic Naturalist. The book might be a great ongoing listener value if you picked one of his questions for each show. The book's by Robert H. Frank. Fun to read for people who don't have a BS degree in economics. Help them understand the economics for everyday enigmas." Well, you know what? Believe it or not, that book is on my shopping cart at Amazon. I think that in the midst of this flurry of books that I had over Christmas, I think I checked that out of the library and read some of it, but I can't actually recall. Is that the Robert Frank that wrote the book recently, Richistan? I'd like to maybe get that book too. Garen also asks, "How about Harry S. Dent for a guru roulette wheel entry? I just finished Edelman's The Lies About Money, who discounted all the demographic forecasters like Dent." Well, you know, I think Harry Dent came up on the roulette wheel back in show number 5 or something. Not that I'm recommending that you go back and listen to show 5 by any stretch of the imagination. Maybe I'll put him on the guru roulette wheel and give us all an update about what's going on with Harry Dent. Harry Dent, what he does is he takes a look at demographic trends, basically things that we can predict with fairly good certainty that people are going to get older, and he tries to then predict an impact that will have on the stock market and housing markets and so forth. His whole thing is that the stock market should go up nicely until about 2010, give or take a year or so, and then crash, basically. Maybe he was a little bit late. Maybe he was a couple of years too late in predicting that. I don't know. And Garen concludes, as always, I marvel at the time you're spending educating your listeners, and your personalization stories, music, and style really make the show very enjoyable. Keep them coming. To which I say, no, thank you. It wouldn't be a show at all unless you were out there listening. Thank you so much. Keep the feedback coming, everyone. Either email it to feedback@madmoneymachine.com or call the voicemail line 206-734-4763. Got an email from Barry in Newfoundland. Hey, Paul, first of all, let me tell you that ever since I've started listening to your podcast, you have definitely helped me clear the clouds out of the sky and open my eyes into the world of investment and personal finance. Here's a question for you. I do agree with you 100% that passively traded index funds are the most secure risk versus return option out there. However, when I look at most index funds available out there, in order to make the most out of them, the initial investment required is super high. What do you recommend for those of us that do not have the type of capital on hand to invest a large sum of cash into a fund, however we are trying to get into the game? Barry in Newfoundland, thanks for the email. And I don't want this to turn into the Susie Orman show, but we do have to revisit basics on this show from time to time. I can't talk about them on every show, or else it would be boring for the remnant, right? But anyway, I'm assuming, Barry, that maybe you work, there's a good chance that you work for someone or a company that has a retirement plan, like a 401k in our country, in the United States, a retirement plan where your employer matches part of your contribution. That's the first thing that you need to do. Set aside some of your salary and put it into a retirement plan, and then certainly get the matching contributions from your company. Short of that, if you can't do number one, then do number two. And number two is save. Even Kramer talks about this in his most recent book, Save Money. Save money. And then number three, once you've saved $3,000, $3,000, open a Vanguard account and buy the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund. I think the ticker symbol is VTSMX. $3,000. That's how you get started, Barry. And then once you've gotten your second $3,000, buy the Vanguard Total International Stock Market Index Fund. And Barry, that's the whole key to it. Just keep saving, keep investing. Pick out about 9 index funds that you will want to eventually get into. Save the money to be able to buy them. Rebalance your portfolio if you need to, principally by contributing more money into the lowest level fund. But that's how you get started. And I wish you, Barry, the very best of luck. Stay invested. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 99 is Phil DeMuth. Don't know who Phil DeMuth is? Well, he is the guy that Ben Stein gets to write his most recent books. Yeah, there's a new book out called Yes, You Can Supercharge Your Portfolio by Ben Stein and Phil DeMuth. And the subtitle is 6 Steps for Investing Success in the 21st Century. And I checked this book out of the library. I didn't want to like it for some reason. After all, these were the guys that wrote the book, Yes, You Can Time the Market. And, of course, my opinion is you can time the market just about as well as you can time the roulette wheel, right? But this book is different than any book I've read so far. And once I opened it up, I really got excited about it. And here is what it's all about. It's all about lazy portfolios and their technique to make them even better. You know, I've been on this kick about analyzing lazy portfolios recently. I'm trying to figure out which lazy portfolio is the best. There are so many of them. As you can see out at the website under the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown page, we have all the professionals that have lazy portfolios, and then we have all of the amateurs, the entries in the game that I've put on. We have 66 people, I think, that have entered a lazy portfolio. So what is the best possible mix of stocks and bonds and equities and across the globe, and what regions and sectors represents the best reward for the least amount of risk? And I'm excited about this book in getting me the answer. And so they do, you know, they do start out obviously with some background about why it's important to diversify. And they even talk about the Scott Burns Six Ways from Sunday portfolio. You know, the one that out at the chart that you're looking at, it seems to have the best return versus risk ratio. But there's something surprising I read in this book by Phil DeMuth on page 52. After discussing several of the lazy portfolios, he writes, "As great as they all are, what these portfolios have in common is that they are significantly under-diversified," in italic print. What? Under-diversified? I'm still reading. With a half a dozen asset classes? Are we crazy? Well, here is their shtick in this book. They are saying that once you get a good lazy portfolio in place, you can supercharge it by adding individual stocks. Oh boy, here we go. You know, I've thought about this in the past. I thought, well, gosh, if stocks have such great returns, then why not add a little bit as the seasoning in your portfolio and trying to get a big winner? And so as a little bit of a background as to how they go about computing some of their answers, they keep talking and talking and talking about a tool that they use, a specific tool that you have to pay money for, from Quantext, Quantext. I think it's $85 a year for this Excel spreadsheet, basically, that does a whole lot of this kind of same things that I'm doing in my spreadsheet that I haven't paid for. It computes the historical returns and historical standard deviation of a portfolio of investments. Now, the thing, I find a few things unfortunate, though. Well, let me just interrupt here and say that this is all going on rather long and getting kind of boring. This segment was 14 minutes long when I first recorded it, and I went back and realized, no, you know, I'm going to write a book review about this and just put it on the website for anybody that's interested in this book. So let me summarize and get straight to the bottom line, straight to the answer here. What these guys are doing is they're using a Monte Carlo simulator to project forward, based upon the past, what might happen in a portfolio. And then what they try to do is, using the past numbers on individual stocks, is pick those individual stocks that would have estimated better returns going into the future. And I really think this is just completely bogus. I think it might work in a bull market when stocks are going up, but heaven help you if you use this technique when stock markets are going down, because I think it's going to go down much more rapidly than if you just put it in a portfolio of index funds. So I don't like the fact that they're not using long-term historical data, they're using short-term historical data. I don't like the fact that they're using this sort of magical Monte Carlo simulator to try to guess. I don't like the fact that they're trying to pick individual stocks to somehow boost the returns in a portfolio. I think all of the returns that you might get are within the margin of error anyway, because none of these portfolios is scientifically guaranteed to give you any sort of risk return characteristic. And it's just as easily to pick stocks that fall anywhere within that standard of error, that margin of error. So I think it's just completely bogus. It's not a lazy portfolio if you're having to go pick stocks and then trade stocks around all the time. It's an active portfolio. So if you must read this book, check it out of the library. Otherwise, I've saved you $24.95. Well, there you have it. Congratulations, Bill DeMuth and Ben Stein. You're the guru on Mad Men Machine Show 99. And like I said, go out to the website, madmenmachine.com, and I've got a book review out there and a blog posting if you're interested in learning more. All right, let me teach you a little shortcut trick for your browser right now that will save you thousands and thousands of keystroke typings over the course of your lifetime. Bring up your browser, whether you're using Internet Explorer or Firefox, and maybe this works for the other ones, I don't know. And you know, at the very top, in that address bar where you type the URL of the website you want to go to, type in just three letters, IFA. All right, just type those three letters. Don't type http://www. Just type IFA. Then hold down the control key and press the enter key. All right, and watch magic happen. It automatically fills in for you all the surrounding junk in the URL that you need. Of course, this only works for .com domains, of which most domains are .com, except for Wikipedia.org, which you can actually get to through Wikipedia.com. You can here hit Control-Shift-Enter, and you get various things. But, bottom line, when you need to go to a website like IFA, just type in the name, then hit Control-Enter, and you are off on your way in a speedy flash, saving you thousands of keystrokes over your lifetime. And while you're out at IFA.com, go in the middle there, right where it says click here in big letters, and take their risk capacity survey. This is absolutely for everyone. The very first step you need to do to get your investing process right. You need to find out how much risk you can accept. Now, after you complete their risk capacity survey, they will send you the 4-CD set, An Audio Journey to Tradeless Nirvana. And believe me, I know you want to listen to this. It has both educational information and entertaining information on it, for example, from yours truly. Let IFA help you manage your financial future. There's nothing better you can do for your financial freedom. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. Well, I just now got an email from somebody at FolioDex. This is through the Bogleheads forum, the diehards.org/forum forum place. And they say, Paul, first of all, thanks for the good work here and on the Mad Money Machine. They say, in order to help index investors with the tasks of calculating standard deviation for their portfolios, we're currently building a set of free web tools dedicated to ETF index portfolios. For the purpose of testing our risk versus return tools, we've entered the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown 2008 group of portfolios into FolioDex. And you can find the 2008 Smackdown results, which is the annualized return divided by standard deviation, here. And I'll have a link to it in the show notes. Basically, the website is foliodex.com. And if you go into their groups tab, you'll see Lazy Portfolio Smackdown. Return is calculated daily, standard deviation monthly. Hope this will save you a little bit of time. P.S. If you find it useful, feel free to post the link. FolioDex team. Oh my goodness, fantastic! This is the first tool like it I've seen other than IFA's Benchmark Your Portfolio tool, where they rate their DFA index funds. This one allows you to enter in your own portfolio, and like they said, they entered in all of the 66 Lazy Portfolio Smackdown contestants, and you can see them all plotted on a chart, and you can click on them and see the contents of the portfolio. This is exactly what I would have developed if I had the time to do it, I think. I just love this. Now, the size of the bubble there depends on the Sharpe ratio of the portfolio. They do sort these by Sharpe ratio descending, so high Sharpe ratio is better. And the size of the bubble then, if it's bigger, it has a higher Sharpe ratio. But you can click different time periods then. You can click year to date, 3 months, 1 year, 3 years, all the way up to 15 years. Well, this is a fascinating tool. I definitely recommend you go play with FolioDex. And my account ID out there is one word, Mad Money Machine. And why don't you hook up with me? And I'll hook up with you. We'll connect up and we'll play. We'll have some fun with FolioDex, the risk versus return calculation tool for your lazy portfolios. Fantastic, guys. I may be talking about this more in upcoming shows. That's our tool on the crib this week, FolioDex, at where else? FolioDex.com. And like other tools I've given you so far, this one is free! That's what I want. It's the second month. Have you finished reading Chapter 2, then, of the 12-Step Program for Active Investors, the book Index Funds by Mark Hevner? If you have finished reading the chapter, then I've got three questions for you. First, who first proposed in the year 1900 that the markets in which stocks are traded are basically random in nature? Was it A, William Sharp, B, Louis Bachelier, C, Eugene Fama, or D, Merton Miller? Your answer should be B, Louis Bachelier. Number two, modern portfolio theory is not so modern because Harry Markowitz first introduced one of its basic tenets in what year? A, 1654, B, 1962, C, 1952, or D, 1933? The answer is C, 1952, over 56 years ago. And question three, final question. The three factors of Fama and French's three-factor model are A, interest rates, currency risk, and Federal Reserve policy, B, company growth rates, earnings per share, analyst reports, or C, market, size, and value, or D, company industry, five-year sales growth rates, or five-year earnings growth rate. The answer, of course, is C. Fama and French's three-factor model are the three factors that indicate the returns of an asset class. The market that you're in, equities, the size of the company, the capitalization, and the value, the book-to-market ratio. And of course, what his studies showed was that the smaller the size of the company, the bigger the returns are in the stocks, and the more value-oriented the stock is, the bigger the returns of the stocks in the long term. Yeah, if you haven't read Chapter 2, definitely go get a copy. Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. I do want to thank you so very much for tuning in to the Mad Money Machine, downloading it to your iPod or listening on the computer. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes igniting the superchargers to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Friday for show number 100. Now, don't get your hopes up too big. This is not going to be some mega extravaganza, but I am going to reveal a secret that I have been keeping from you for 2 years now, and I think you're going to have a lot of fun with that. In the meantime, go visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors, at IFA.com. Let them help you manage your financial freedom. There's no one I recommend more highly than Index Funds Advisors. And for all of those folks that don't like music being played on this show, you can stop your iPod now, but I'm going to play a song now that I thought was kind of cute and clever that I found on YouTube by Aeneas Mitchell called 1984, and it's apropos of nothing, but it's kind of cute. I'll see you next week.
Down at headquarters, there's a big database with black and white photos of the side of your beautiful face and your library record and all your test scores and an invitation to party like it's 1984. Brothers at the